At 6:20, this is KERA News. I'm Justin Martin. Today, an Arlington High School English teacher won a National Education Honor. The Milken Educator Award comes with a $25,000 prize. KERA's Bill Zeeble reports the honor brought cheers from students and tears to the teacher.
Some call it the Oscars of teaching, even though few know about the Milken Award. For 30 years, the California-based foundation has sought out top teachers and administrators. Milken Vice President Jane Foley won it in 1994.
You can't apply. We do not accept nominations. You don't find us. We find you. We're going all over the country to find the best of the best.
A group of Texas educators recommended a teacher at Arlington Collegiate High School, and the Milken Foundation agreed. It was all top secret. Students filled the cafeteria for what most thought was an assembly. Instead, Foley made a surprise announcement.
May I have the envelope? The Milken Educator Award goes to Jennifer Fuller!
Jennifer Fuller teaches 11th grade English and college prep classes, all on the Tarrant County Southeast College campus. She was happy, shocked, and had never even heard of the award.
Thank you very much. I have the best job in the world. And I work with the most magnificent children and staff, and I am so lucky to get to spend every single day with these wonderful folks.
Fuller's been teaching 15 years. She says though her mother was a teacher, she didn't want to be. But in her last year at TCU, took her father's advice and got a teaching certificate just in case to be employable. She hasn't looked back.
I love every kid, and I think they know that. And when they walk in the room, I work to make their day as good as it can possibly be because I know they come to us from a lot of different places where their days are not great.
Nearly 90% of kids at Arlington Collegiate High are economically disadvantaged. Fuller's students say she challenges them all the time and won't let them slide. That's why they love her back. Bill Zeeble, KERA News.
There is perhaps no painting more recognizable than the Mona Lisa. And what has captivated viewers for centuries is their smile. Today on Think, Chris Boyd talked with biographer Walter Isaacson about how Leonardo da Vinci used science to craft the world's most famous smile.
He dissects the human face and peels off the skin of cadavers so that he can look at every single muscle that touches the lip and every single nerve that controls those muscles and whether the nerves go to the brain or the spinal cord. Also, he dissects the human eye and discovers that at the exact center of the retina, the cones see tiniest of details. But on the edges of the retina, the cones actually see shadows and color better. So he paints the Mona Lisa smile and repaints it for 13 years so that the tiniest details on the edge of her lips actually don't smile. They turn downward slightly. But the shadows and colors turn upward. So it's an elusive smile. If you look directly at it, she looks like she might not be smiling after all. But as your eyes wander to her cheek or to her chin or some other place, suddenly the smile lights up because you're catching it with a different part of your retina. And so this is all of the sophisticated science, but also feel for the patterns of nature that go into just making an elusive smile that smiles at you, except for when you look hardest for it.
Walter Isaacson is the author of Leonardo da Vinci. He'll talk about his book on October 26th at DMA Arts and Letters Live. This episode of Think re-airs tonight at 10, and you can subscribe to the podcast at think.kera.org. There are only a handful of working B-17 bombers today, and one is in Fort Worth this week. These so-called flying fortresses were hulking four-engine bombers, and during World War II, it carried a 10-man crew and tons of bombs into battle. KERA's Christopher Connolly took a ride in the Madras Maiden, and he reports it was a reunion of sorts for the plane and a woman who hasn't seen it in years.
The Madras Maiden is all gleaming metal with red markings, decked out with hulking machine guns on all sides. Up near the cockpit, a painted pinup girl in short shorts salutes from the side of the plane. It was on a tarmac like this in 1979 that Chucky Hospers first saw this plane. Her husband, an orthopedic surgeon everybody called Doc, had bought it.
I didn't know whether to divorce him, commit him. I thought he'd lost his mind. What are you going to do with the B-17? How are you going to keep it? How are you going to maintain it? And it totally changed our life.
The pair eventually founded the Vintage Flying Museum a few hangars down at Meacham Airport. Back in 1979, Doc had painted this B-17 with yellow details and scrawled his wife's name in cursive on the side. Chucky was the plane's name for 3 decades.
I mean, we flew it all over the country. We'd have engine failures. We'd be flying on 3 engines. We would have, I mean, everything that would happen to them except being shot at in World War II happened to us mechanically.
Hospers sold the plane after Doc died in 2010 to the Liberty Foundation, which takes it around the country to keep World War II history alive. It's Hospers' first time going back up in the B-17 in years, and she climbs in with practiced ease. As the pilots rev up the engines, Hospers says it can take a while to get them going.
So you'd spin them. We'd count about 9 rotations or 12, and then they would engage the starter. So there it's spinning. Come on, baby. And you'd go like this. Come on, baby. Come on, baby. And then it would start. And that smoke is normal. Don't get excited.
The U.S. military ordered about 12,000 B-17s, and they fought in all theaters of World War II. They're said to have dropped more tons of bombs in Europe than any other U.S. bomber, though this particular B-17 never dropped a single bomb. Instead, it was a radar and research plane. Once we're well off the ground, we're allowed to unstrap and walk around. I make my way to the front, stepping around the ball turret on the plane's underside, crossing a narrow gangplank over the bomb bay doors, and into the cockpit, where 2 pilots are monitoring gauges and toggling switches. To get to the nose, I have to crawl on hands and knees through a narrow opening between the pilots. It opens up a panoramic view from the nose gunner's perch.
You can taste, you can smell the burning aviation fuel. The noise is absolutely deafening. You can barely hear yourself think, but the view from the nose of this aircraft is incredible.
Lake Worth is glittering underneath us, and downtown Fort Worth rises in the distance. A few minutes later, the captain rings a bell. It's time to head back to our seats. As we land and the bomber moves across the tarmac, Chucky Hosper says the trip brought back memories.
The smell of the gasoline, the avgas, hydraulic fluid, all those smells come back. All your senses are just reawakened. It was great.
But Hosper says it's important to remember. For airmen serving in World War II, riding in a B-17 was cold, uncomfortable, and often deadly. Out on the tarmac, pilot Bob Hill says the casualty statistics were stark.
Particularly by late war, we put 1,000 bombers in the air on a mission, but 300 of them would be shot down. You know, so in 10 men on an airplane, it's staggering.
Hill has talked to a lot of World War II veterans over the years and says they had other ways to measure the danger.
You know, you got to the barracks and there'd be the empty bunks there that nobody was coming home, and then somebody would be collecting their personal items. Or you saw the airplane go down, and then you're trying to count parachutes coming out of the airplane. Did they get out? How many got out?
Bob Hill says maintaining old planes like this is important because it keeps alive the sacrifices made by the greatest generation. Christopher Connolly, KERA News.
Check out pictures of the Madras Maiden at keranews.org. And for the evening, partly cloudy skies with a cool low around 57 later tonight. It's 6:30. This is KERA News.